House Bill 5001 is waiting for approval from the state Senate after it passed the House last week. This is the universal absentee ballot bill championed by State Representative Matt Blumenthal out of Stamford. And Representative Blumenthal actually joins us back on the show. He's also the House Chair for the Government Administration and Elections Committee. Representative Blumenthal, I've got to tell you, I was at a forum with the Secretary of the State. She had asked me to come up and speak to the registrars across Connecticut, so more than 400 people, about media relations during elections. And it was quite an experience. And as I was doing my presentation, she actually came up on stage and let everyone know she had to go. And she said, just so you know, House Bill 5001 was just called to the floor. And she said, and so I'll keep you posted what happens. And then there she goes. So it ended up passing the House, but not without its fair share of drama. What transpired before it actually passed last Thursday?
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me back. And it's great to be talking about this bill, which passed the House. So we called it initially on Wednesday at around 4 p.m. And I ended up, or a little before 4 p.m., and I ended up debating it or leading debate on it on the floor for about 8 hours before we decided to call timeout at the end of the night. And in the off session overnight and in the morning the next day, there were negotiations between us and the Republicans, and ultimately we made some minor changes and it passed the next day. And so the bill contains provisions allowing no excuse absentee voting, otherwise known as absentee voting for all. It also contains some good changes to our absentee voting laws and our voting laws to ensure that absentee ballots that are returned without the signature can be cured, and so that everyone can ensure that they have an opportunity to have their vote counted. It has better tracking mechanisms to ensure that voters and everyone else can track where ballots are in the process, and some other provisions that are going to help make our elections more secure and safe and efficient. And so we had our fair amount of drama. Ended up on the floor for 8 hours and change debating the bill, but it got done, and we're looking forward to it getting passed in the Senate as well.
So there were a couple of things that the Republican Party really didn't like, it sounded. One thing in particular was a provision that would have allowed a voter to permanently sign up for voting by mail, I guess, which would have resulted in ballots automatically being mailed before every election. So that has been taken out?
Yes, that's correct. So it was interesting because the Republicans had a lot of things that they didn't like in the bill, but sometimes you need to fight it out to figure out what the other party's bottom line is. And eventually, after the 8 hours of debate, they made clear to us that that was the provision that they objected to the most and that they really cared about the most. And so we agreed to a compromise on it. And so the original provision would have allowed for everyone who's an eligible voter to sign up for what's called a permanent absentee voter list. So they would just get sent an absentee ballot for every election. It happens in roughly 12 states, and it's been very successful in secure and safe elections and increasing turnout. However, it would have been a big change for us, along with another big change, which would be no excuse absentee voting. And so we agreed to a compromise that would allow for someone to sign up for a permanent absentee voter application list. So they would be able to be sent an application for an absentee ballot for every election. So they would have that reminder the election's happening. They would have that reminder that they can get an absentee ballot, and they would have it conveniently there for them so they'd be able to request it.
Okay. And so that amended version allows voters to sign up for absentee ballot applications. The applications will go automatically to the mail, but not an actual ballot.
Exactly. There's no change to the current permanent absentee voter list, which is for permanently disabled voters. They will continue to be able to obtain an automatic absentee ballot, but everybody else will only be able to sign up for an automatic absentee ballot application. And so that'll hopefully help increase turnout by reminding people that our elections are happening, ensuring that they have a convenient mechanism to get an absentee ballot if they wish, but it won't be an automatic absentee ballot. And we'll be able to see how the system develops now that we have absentee voting for all before we make any changes like that.
I was reading also, Representative Blumenthal, something else Republicans had an issue with was in regards to the early voting period. they wanted to cut that in half because right now we offer 14 days. Was that addressed at all or adjusted?
There's no change to early voting in this bill. The Republicans have, since the beginning, wanted a lot less early voting. And most of them opposed the early voting changes unless they were very minor. When we initially passed it, they wanted about 3 days. Even then, it wasn't clear that they were going to agree to vote for it. We have one of the smaller lengths of early voting in the country. All but three states have early voting now, and most have more than us. We do have a more complicated election system, and so the registrars have indicated that it is a burden on them. Early voting, early in-person voting is labor-intensive. So there are no changes to the early voting period for now, and that's because we want to see how absentee voting for all shakes out with early voting and election day voting. We need the data to see how people choose to vote and what the vote shares are and how we should allot resources in the future. I do imagine in the future and anticipate in the future that we are going to make changes to early voting based on what we see with absentee voting for all. I can imagine in the future that absentee voting for all will replace part of the early voting period because it will be significantly more efficient for elections officials.
So, okay, because I was going to say the cutting down from 14 to 7 days, I would imagine was a money thing. Because it falls on the municipalities, right, to pay for early voting?
Yeah, I think the municipalities and the registrars were concerned about the resources. They were concerned about the ability to recruit elections workers in some of the smaller towns. So I think in the future, once we see how absentee voting for all works and how people choose to vote early through absentee voting, we may see early voting change so that either the period is reduced or certain communities or communities of certain sizes aren't required to have as much early voting because it can be a strain. Obviously, democracy is priceless. And so we have to ensure that every person has the opportunity to vote conveniently, securely, and safely, regardless of the cost. But the cost is something we should be taking into account. And when we have opportunities for people to vote conveniently, like absentee voting for all, once we see how people utilize them, I think we will be able to modify the early voting process so that it's easier on our towns and easier on our registrars.
We're chatting with State Representative Matt Blumenthal, who is the House Chair for the Government Administration and Elections Committee and has been a champion behind House Bill 5001, which would allow for universal absentee ballots in Connecticut. How many other states have this right now, Representative Blumenthal? 36?
How many? 36 other states and the District of Columbia.
Got it. So we would be in line with much of the country having something like this. Are you worried at all about, or does this provision kind of address this? Do you worry at all about households getting an absentee ballot, but the person doesn't exist or has perished? We actually had a colleague of ours whose father passed away in the last election cycle. He passed before. So an absentee ballot was sent to his home. Now, of course, she did the right thing. She didn't fill it out, obviously. But do you worry about that? Do we have any protections in place for that? Say somebody does fill out an application, and I know this probably sounds like I'm doing kind of a witch hunt, but I'm not. I just want to know the answer. Is if somebody passes away before an election but has filled out the application, when do they get those applications? I mean, do they get them, earlier in the year? Do they get them only a couple weeks before the election? Because my point being is if a ballot gets sent to somebody who does not exist anymore, what would keep, I guess, a ballot from being counted if the person doesn't exist?
Yeah, so the case that you're describing is a real one that happens from time to time, obviously pretty rare. But people do apply for an absentee ballot and then unfortunately pass away during the period between that application and the election itself. Our registrars and town clerks and our Secretary of the State's office have mechanisms through which they cross-check our voter rolls with other lists that keep track of some of these things. So almost always these sorts of things are caught and registered. That being said, it is true that it doesn't always happen. However, as you said, the vast majority of people who are faced with that situation where they have a family member or household member who has unfortunately passed away during the period between the application and receiving the ballot, they don't fill it out because they know it's a 5-year prison sentence to commit voting fraud. And frankly, you know, for most people, it would be pretty crazy to do, because why would you risk a prison term like that? And let's put that, even the penalty aside, why would you just do the wrong thing and commit a crime like that just for one additional vote in an election? So, you know, it almost never happens. I'm sure it has happened before in history. But those applications will go out pretty much right before the period when absentee ballots become available. They will not go out very far in advance.
So I agree that we thankfully don't see, you know, any kind of absentee ballot fraud in great lengths in Connecticut happen. Thank God for that. However, to answer your question, why would we do it when there are so many penalties? I think that's a great question for Bridgeport, because they have no problem doing it, quite frankly. And I don't see where the penalties have really come into play for certain actors who have had no problem with absentee ballot fraud. And I don't know if that's a matter
I was just going to say, you know, the criminal justice process is ongoing right now, and it may be that we see serious penalties soon. The penalties for the offenses are certainly, that are on the books, are certainly serious. And I think most people would agree that the penalties have not been sufficient to deter individuals in terms of how they have been actually handed down in the past for some of these cases.
No, and not so, at all. Agreed.
So, you know, I'm hopeful that this process will come to a conclusion fully, fairly, transparently, with just outcomes. And if people are found guilty of the crimes of which they're committed, that the penalties will be sufficiently serious, as they are under our laws, or that the penalties will be sufficiently serious, that they send the message that this sort of conduct is unacceptable and won't be accepted in this state. I think also one of the things that's going on in Bridgeport and perhaps in other places where we've seen absentee ballot misconduct in the past is, in the past, before we had absentee voting for all, there was an incentive to cheat because the rules were complicated. Certain people might be eligible to vote, but not eligible to vote absentee because our absentee voting rules are very restrictive. And then, you know, otherwise they might not be able to vote. And so you could go to someone who was able to vote, but not able to vote absentee, and get an absentee ballot for them. And then you get a pure advantage in the election. What we've seen in other states, and hopefully what we'll see here in Connecticut going forward, is that when absentee voting is readily and widely available to any eligible voter, that advantage goes away. And anyone, since any eligible voter can vote absentee, any potential cheating would be swamped by the proper and eligible votes and won't happen. And so we're trying to deter misconduct. We're trying to, reduce the incentive for misconduct. And I think that absentee voting for all will actually help do that. And it will also create an additional deterrence, because you'll never know if the person you're trying to improperly obtain an absentee ballot on behalf of is voting absentee on their own. And that's a significant deterrent, I think, because it makes it clear that you'll never know if you're going to get away with it. And hopefully between the serious penalties that are on the books and those incentives and disincentives, we won't be seeing this going forward.
One more quick thing about eligible voters. I know Republicans also objected to other provisions in this bill, which, again, did pass the House, including a section that would have barred federal immigration agents from coming within 250 feet of polling places. Did that get removed?
It did not. It has passed the House. As you mentioned, there is a provision in there to address the fact that we have seen some very disturbing statements from the president and his allies. He said he wants to take over and nationalize elections. He's apparently demanded or instructed federal law enforcement to engage in some very concerning raids related to the 2020 election in Georgia and Arizona, seizing ballots and elections equipment. and his close allies have urged him to deploy ICE and other immigration or federal law enforcement near election sites. Look, none of that would be proper or legal or constitutional. The U.S. Constitution gives the states the primary responsibility and power to administer our elections. We don't want federal agents or officials who have no business being involved in our elections near election sites. Many people, based on what happened in Minneapolis and across the country, would find that intimidating. And so we do have a provision in this bill, which hopefully will pass the Senate soon and be signed into law by the governor, that prohibit any law enforcement or immigration enforcement or troops, regardless of state or federal, to be near polling place without the permission of our elections officials.
Wait, that like you mean state police can't?
Yeah, if they get permission from the Secretary of the State's office or elections officials, they can be there. So I anticipate very little will change in terms of state and local police. But we want to make sure that all our law enforcement, if they're going to be in the vicinity of a polling place, they have the permission of our elections officials, and those election officials are tracking what they're doing and ensuring that everything is well coordinated. Again, I anticipate that nothing will change for state and local, but we certainly don't want the federal agents to be in the vicinity of polling places or federal troops to be in the vicinity of polling places.
Huh. So the only thing, you kind of had me until you said that even state, I feel like, can we have even local cops there? I mean, local cops don't even know what to do because of the Trust Act anyways. But like, so we essentially can't have police near polling places. I mean, not to bring up Bridgeport again, but we've literally had fights break out at polling places.
Yeah, just to be clear, we will have police properly and as given permission by elections officials in the vicinity of polling places. The bill specifically provides that if they get permission from the Secretary of the State and the local or the election officials locally, or there's an emergency or a number of other exceptions, then they'll be able to be there. So I anticipate that elections officials or the Secretary of the State will give state and local police the permission they need to do all the things they need to do and that they do normally. That's our understanding of how things will work.
But technically they don't have to. Are you saying, though, they technically don't have to? So, like, if a municipality hears enough from people that they don't want cops or anybody at their polling places, technically they don't have to give that right to their police?
Well, the Secretary of the State's office would be able to give them permission as well. And we anticipate they would do that because we've been in communication with the Secretary's office. So we don't anticipate anything will change with regard to state and local police, but it'll just give the opportunity for the state. Secretary of the State's office and local elections officials to be involved in the process. And the reason why we did that is just to make sure that the bill passes constitutional muster. Again, based on our conversations with the Secretary's office and elections officials across the state, we anticipate that nothing will change with regard to state and local police and their ability to be involved to ensure that our elections are conducted safely.
Unfortunately, Representative Blumenthal, we've run out of time. I definitely have more to discuss on this front, but, unfortunately, I'm up against the clock. But I thank you for starting the conversation here, and we'll definitely track what happens next with this bill headed to the Senate for a vote probably this week. Thank you so much for your time.